This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice, as opposed to the images on the internet which say I should now be hunched and wearing a bun with grey hair.
Of course, because you've turned the big Hawaii 5-0. Now, Nikki Moffat, I have to say, I did have a look through the socials on the weekend. I absolutely loved your 50th celebration. It looked like lots of fun. I was very impressed with your beautiful husband setting up a little stand for you down in the park, you know, with drinks and things for you to have after your walk. But I did notice a group of 50-year-old women who were all sitting on the couch together side by side, shoulder to shoulder, having their photo taken. And I don't know, I didn't feel there was a lot of social distancing in that picture.
No, that picture was put up and it said date, no date, comment, no comments attached. Well, we did start off in the park and we were all sitting 2 metres apart.
You were miles away. Yes, you were all miles away. It was like you were all in the park miles away and then you all went inside and had a big cuddle.
Well, because it started raining, there's a big storm. We didn't have a cuddle. We just had a photo at the end. And I feel a bit bad because at work sort of everyone's back to hugging and everything and I still don't. Ooh. I stand out. I stand out of the hug. Yeah. If someone comes to the office, whatever, I stand out. And so I feel really bad that that photo was taken, but we had such a lovely evening that I wanted to include the photos. But I can tell you, Kirsty Rice, from yesterday, it was announced yesterday that I can have up to 25 people in my home anytime I like.
Right.
So
can you hug them?
I think you can probably hug. I think you can probably hug anyone. I found it really difficult over the weekend on the hugging thing. Only because we're not doing it because we're high risk household, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. I'm finding it really hard. Not as hard as I found it in the beginning, but I'm still finding it a little bit weird. You know, I don't do any sort of the elbow things. Like I've got a few friends, particularly male friends, who are very into like let's bump elbows as opposed to the handshake, you know, for the handshake alternative. But I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm feeling very weird. It's like when you move to a new country and, you know, they kiss 3 times or they shake hands or they do something totally different from the last country you were in.
Yeah.
And you have this feeling of awkwardness for a while until it becomes quite natural to you.
Yes.
You know, how much you touch or how much you don't touch, etc. And that's how I'm feeling right now. I'm feeling in this limbo land where I feel a bit awkward about how much touching I'm doing.
Yes. Yeah, I know what you mean. And I feel the same because what I've noticed here is I have a bunch of friends who say, oh, come on, let's just have a hug, you know, because they, and, you know, rightly so, they're living in a state where there are 0 cases and nobody has it. And so they're like, well, you know, we've made it, let's hug. But I'm still like, I'm not going to start up on that just yet because same thing. Because you're thinking, well, it'd be just my luck with the way my 2020 is going that I will be the first one to get it. Do you know? There'll be some random way because everything else is not going well for me this year. So, and I don't think I'm being a drama queen when I say that. I think it has been seriously.
No, I think that's very fair.
So, yeah, I'm the same. I'm like, but I am a hugger. I'm a big hugger. I love a big long hug. And so it is, it's so hard because you keep seeing these people that you absolutely adore. And then you can see the hurt on their face when you knock them back. Do you know, you can see them like, oh, okay. Because there's something nice about refusing a hug. I don't know. And yeah, elbowing.
It's weird.
Elbowing doesn't feel remotely intimate. You know, you might as well go up and just stomp on someone's toe as soon as elbow them. Okay, Nikki Moffat, this is the time of the day where you and I come out with our 4 fat questions, our 4 fat expat questions. Nikki, Where will you retire? Do you know, as an expat who's been out of Australia for nearly 20 years and lived all over the place and turning the big 5-0, are you thinking about where you'll retire?
No, much to the chagrin of my husband, who drives him insane. He likes to discuss the future.
Yes.
Ad infinitum. And he doesn't love,
I'm at one with your husband. I totally agree.
He doesn't love that I think it's okay that we don't have to plan. Look, these are the things that I consider. And I would say to you now, no idea apart from Australia. In my mind, it's Australia. And then he says things like, what about, you know, would you consider somewhere else? And I say, no. Why? Because I wouldn't. You know, like it's just – so we go down this track and round in circles. We have a block of land that is by the water, and we don't have a house on it, but we could build a house on it. And that's what we talked about, that that's a possibility that we could retire there and maybe have an apartment or a small something in another city, because it's not in a city. It's 2 hours from Sydney. So, you know, it's not in the hubbub. But I think, you know, do you want to be? I'm not sure. So that's our plan, is we have a house, we have a block of land, and can build a house there. And to me, that's enough for now. I'm like 15, 20 years out, I'm good with that. But I mean, things that you consider, and you hear this all the time, and we would be in the same situation. I mean, it's a place I've been going since I'm a little girl. I've been a little girl, but it's still a place we don't live. You know, a lot of people in Australia say, oh, well, I've worked for 30 years and lived for 40 years in this city, and now I'm moving to Queensland to retire, and then, because it's warm. And then they move there and they don't know anyone or anything, and they don't have any activities that, you know, or hobbies that they do that are around beachside living or whatever kind of new living they're doing. And they find it all really, really difficult. And I imagine that will be no different for us, no matter what we do or where we go, if we don't retire in the last place we land as expats. I mean, we are very different to you, Kirsty, because you've, since you've had a house in Australia and children there for the last 7 or 8 years, you've spent a lot of your time between the two places. So you have more of a feeling probably for Australia and living there, et cetera, than we even do right now. So if I would ask you the question, Kirsty, what would you say? Where will you retire?
Oh, well, see, this is where we have had a big, I guess, a momentous moment of change in that So we did build, you know, the family home as the unit and the bolt hole, I guess, for everyone to come back to. And we had always thought, well, you know, yeah, we'd probably retire down here at the beach in this lovely house that we've built, and, you know, we've built a great community here, and we love it. And, you know, I come back here every June in the school holidays, and we can't wait to get back here. And everybody goes, oh, but you're going back to winter. And we're like, yep, but we've left, you know, 50 degree heat in Qatar. So we usually can't wait to get back here, get the fire on, jeans, boots, jumpers, you know, the whole thing, winter beach walks. And, you know, we stay all through sort of June, July, August, which is, you know, winter, and then we head back at the end of August and go back to Doha, having had a fabulous time. And, of course, when G was diagnosed with cancer, it was early March, and so we were back here by March 11th. Well, by the time the June long weekend rolled around, we were done with winter. Like, we were like, yeah, we're done. And then I think it must have been sort of probably about 6 weeks ago, G said one morning, oh, I could not live here. I just could not live here.
Full time.
And I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. Neither could I. And so I guess my advice for our expats out there, you might think that you're going to retire somewhere, and you might even go there on holidays and think, yep, this would be a great place to retire. But until you've actually lived there, you really don't know. And for us, like, now we're sort of going, okay, well, we know that we love it here from October through to March.
We really like it.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just feel, Nikki, I don't know if I could do the old South Australian winters all year round. Well, or maybe I've got to find a different way of dealing. Don't know.
No, I totally hear you, because my father, who used to live in New South Wales, now lives on the Gold Coast in Queensland, and says to us constantly, you don't want to live there. You don't want to build a house and live there permanently. It's too cold. It's too cold. And, you know, as a man in his mid-70s, you've got to listen to him as an expert on what older people are feeling like about the weather. I don't. I've listened to him as an expert about other things, but I do about that.
Yeah. So I guess too, and because retire is different to where you're going to repatriate when you are working, because obviously when you're working, you need, you know, you possibly need a city, or unless you've geared up a job that, you know, you can do from home. But yes, when it comes to the old, because I think we do make those little things, those little investment properties or whatever. But yeah, my advice would be just go and plant yourself somewhere for an entire year. So, yes, that's me on where would you retire.
Okay, Kirsty, COVID shaming, it's a thing. People are like online, like, my country is better than your country at doing this. Why are we still letting people in? Why haven't all the people that need to be here come yet? Why are we still having people arrive? What happened to everyone taking a step back and reflecting? Or do you think that it's just like COVID-related stresses, economic and otherwise, are kicking in, and so people are sort of losing their temper a little bit about this stuff?
Yeah. Look, I think it's definitely the stresses are settling in, because I think, you know, we were all so good at the beginning of being open-minded with, well, this isn't just going to go away and this is going to last for a while, and it was all easy saying it. But, I mean, what are we now? For those who are in China, and this started in January, right? Yeah. And for the rest of us, you know, maybe March. So I don't know. I think I definitely have so much stress regarding COVID in, you know, how am I ever going to get back to Qatar, and how am I going to deal with having children in one country and me in another, and, you know, I can't even see how that works. But I think, yeah, people are living on the edge all the time because there's no solution.
Yeah, and people like solutions, I guess. But it was interesting. So someone as Clarissa in our Facebook group said, so how conditioned are we by our expat experiences? So she was talking to an expat friend on the weekend about how awful she found the pictures of all the people on the beaches and illegal raves in the UK last week, because we had a heat wave here in Europe last week. And she said, living in China and having experience there, behavioral compliance towards COVID, she questioned whether that has made her feelings and frustrations more extreme as a consequence. Does she look at that and think, oh gosh, we can do it here, why can't they do it there? You know, even though had she never lived in China, she might have thought differently about how that was all going down.
Yes.
And I think that kind of thing is true. So as an expat, we always talked about having lived in different countries, how we have a different view on things, and maybe the way our country where we live and our country where we are from has dealt with COVID, we're looking at them differently. I mean, before we came on, we were talking about the recent flare-up in Australia, and we were having a whole conversation about that. And I was saying, you know, Australia is rightly, you know, dealing on a panic level with a particular state, poor Victoria. Yet in Germany,
Victoria,
as Australian media calls it. Yet in Germany, every morning I wake up and there's 400 new cases, and we're dealing with it well, you know, like apparently, according to our media and according to the people here. It's just a different kind of view on it. And so I've tried to think that I'm pretty tolerant in the way that people are dealing with it, and different countries and, you know, obviously different governments and different rules. But I did see something the other day. So someone posted in a group, so we're looking for a third country. You know, we're a family living in Sweden, and we have a new baby, and our grandparents are from the USA. And at the moment, neither of us can travel to each country. So we're looking for a third country that we can all go to and meet together. So we want somewhere that accepts travellers from both countries.
And was it just for a holiday, or it was
just for a holiday so the grandparents can meet the baby? And I was like, that's outrageous in my mind. And then I was thinking, hang on, I'm doing the COVID shaming that I was that I've been thinking about. Why is everyone doing that? But I was thinking, that seems a little bit extreme to do that. Like, yeah, but obviously, and I have a friend here who's from the US, and she is struggling about whether they go back to the US over summer. Now, everyone hears that and goes, oh my God, why would you go back to the US over summer? And she said, I agree. But if you look at where she's going to, she flies into DC and then Delaware, I think, is where the beach house is. And they don't have any, like, the cases there are very small and under control and
yeah,
all that kind of stuff. So it's the flying that is the biggest exposure for anybody in and out. And she said, obviously, on the face of it, hearing someone say, I'm going to fly to the US, everyone would say, why would you do that?
Yeah.
But when you look at the actual smaller level detail, then, and you can go and be by the beach for 6 weeks, whereas here in Europe, like, you can go to another country, but, you know, and then why would you spend all your money doing that when you could go to your own house in another country? I don't know. And flights to the US are cheaper right now. Return flights to Washington are cheaper than return flights to Munich from Hamburg. How about that?
Wow. I think it goes back to, have you seen that little graph that's making its way around the world at the moment? And it says back in March, there's a bar and it's got fear of catching COVID and the bar's up to 100. And then it says COVID cases and, you know, the bar goes up to 5. It's tiny. And then it'll say, now in July, fear of COVID, the bar's tiny, cases of COVID, and the bar's up to 100. And I think it's that, isn't it? Because, I mean, I just think about even us, Nikki, like when we first started talking about this, and our fear was so huge because we'd both had newly ill family members that we were so worried about. And we really were in lockdown, and, you know, just one trip to the supermarket. And even then you were sterilizing on the way in, sterilizing on the way out, you know, mask the whole things. And I look around now and I go, you know, even we now have, we had people for dinner last night. Do you know, now I feel very confident that those people are healthy and safe and whatever, but you're meeting with a mass group and you're going to work every day, but still you're saying, you know, there's 300 cases, new cases a day. So it's playing with our minds completely, because you know rationally yourself that you could still get it, but there's only so much you can do to make sure you don't. And then I guess there's, you know, and it's where you fit on that bar of who you're with and what their relationship is to it. And, of course, culturally we're all going to be very different in our thoughts.
Yeah, it's just something that's been niggling at me for a little while when I've seen the comments and things. And I you know, even my brother said to me when I was talking to him on the weekend, you know, why aren't these people already back in Australia if they need to come? You know, because a lot of the new cases are coming from returnees. Mm-hmm. I said, well, Tim, no one wants to come back to Australia now. Like, it's not that they're coming for a holiday. They're either repatriating because they've lost their job and they can't stay in the country they're living in, so they have to leave. Mm. I said, or they've got a sick and dying family member and they want to be there. Mm. I said, it's not a choice someone would make, because to fly to Australia is far, it's expensive. Now it's even more expensive.
And it's scary.
And it's scary, and you have to go into quarantine for 2 weeks. Yeah. And so you're not coming for a minute and then turning around. I mean, no one's coming and then leaving again and just dropping the COVID off on the way. Like, it's totally,
yeah,
the reason people are coming into the country are for serious, genuine reasons. Yeah. They're not coming for fun.
Oh, it's the same. I always think about it with refugees. If everybody had to interview every refugee that was trying to get in the country, they'd all get in. Because if we could all put a personal story into someone's plight, we would all understand. But when they're faceless, it's easy to sit back and say, just stop letting these people in. Because, I mean, I know we have 3 new cases in South Australia this week, and they're all people that flew in. Now, I don't care about that because I go, well, they flew in, they were tested at the airport, they took them to the quarantine, they'll be in quarantine for 2 weeks. They won't be allowed into the community until they've, you know, served their time.
Until they're better now.
Until they're better.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I might see on a Facebook group from, you know, wherever somebody's gone, oh, great. 3 new cases because, you know, the way they're saying it is they've probably infected everybody on the plane, infected everybody at the airport, and, you know, and now, so, you know, and that person's obviously living on edge a little more than I am. So, until there is a vaccine, this is just going to go on and on. And it, when you, even with those words coming out of my mouth, it's like, oh, Kirsty, that sounds so pessimistic. And I'm not, but I mean, I'm just, I think maybe were we all expecting there was going to be an answer by now?
Of course we are, because that's the way our world works. Mm-hmm. We are in a world where things happen quickly, where we're like technology changes so quickly, everything changes so quickly. And when a problem comes up, and because we're used to these news cycles and these sensationalist situations, mm-hmm. no matter, I mean, it's more in some countries than other, but after a week or 2 weeks, we're on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And this has just gone on and on and on. And we're like, why aren't we on the next thing yet? This seems a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
And so we have no tolerance for this. We have no tolerance in our lifestyles or in our, you know, we don't have time for this. What do you mean? And what about all our planned holidays? That we've planned for weeks and years and et cetera, et cetera.
To bring this back to an expat issue too, I mean, that's the thing. This is a nightmare for anyone who's trying to recruit people internationally or anyone who's who wants to work and live, you know, in another country. And I think at the beginning of this happening in the expat world, it was like, oh, well, I guess, you know, I'm grounded for the next 6 months until this kind of rolls through and whatever. And as this goes on, it's like, oh, hang on. How am I, this isn't just a matter of I only go to my home country once a year to visit my mother. This could go on for 2 years, or, you know, this is a whole different thing. And then, of course, now we have people losing their jobs and everyone's situation has changed. And, you know, we've had this conversation over and over about how does this look for expats. And I keep thinking, well, you know, if people like me with university educated children or, you know, what I have going on, well, it's like, well, this is not a go back and forth applicable situation anymore. Like I can no longer live the life I've lived for the last 5 years. And I think about,
well, sorry, 4 or 5 times a year you were going backwards and forwards.
That's right. And I think about now, well, does expat life only suit singles more? But then you go, well, that's a huge commitment for a single to make, to jet off and then, you know, not come back at all. You know, you really are going back to the old original days of you take your 3-year contract and you go and
we'll see you then.
And we'll see you at the end of your 3 years, because you won't be able to, you know, and it's even if you're brave enough to go and travel back and forth, it's all the 2-week quarantine and everything else. You won't be able to do it. You can't go to, you know, Nigeria for a meeting if you're in quarantine for 2 weeks before you have the meeting. And yes, I know we all have Zoom now and we've all got better at all of that, but there are some things that you work-wise that can't be done over a screen. I think all of these things are just settling in of, you know, I keep trying to go back and go, okay, well, how would this have worked 20 years ago with babies and whatever? And, you know, would we have been okay with 3 children under 4? And, well, no, because, you know, we moved 4 times in 7 years in those early days.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have worked. So,
no.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think any of us covered for this. And, you know, has anyone talked about swine flu with you today, Nikki?
Oh, no.
It's like,
no, but I've,
it's like bringing the locusts, bringing the plague. Like, when's the tsunami going to hit any moment? It really is like the end of the world. Anyway, Nikki, we can carry on, but have I answered your question? I don't know, but I think it was,
well, interesting. It was more discussion. Just a general conversation about, yeah, how it's looking and how it relates to us. So, yeah. Yes, I think you have covered that. Thank you, Kirsty.
Nikki, how have you kept your kids' immunization records?
Well, funny you should ask, Kirsty. This is a recent conversation because Germany have brought in new rules about immunization, and I have to provide vaccination records to the school, which I didn't have to provide before we came. I just had to tick a box to say that, yes, they'd been vaccinated. And so now I have to provide the records. Now, I started off in Australia and New South Wales, we had a thing called a blue book. So when my son was a baby, which he was up to 11 months when we left Australia, he had all his vaccinations listed in there. And then we went to Hong Kong and they used the book, and then they just would cross things out and write things. And I'd be like, okay, let's keep going. And then after that, it just sort of all got a bit messy. And then we got to the US and they were much stricter on how many vaccinations they had to have. They had to have a lot more than we'd had in the past. So our GP there, or our pediatrician, started recording things, and so took all the pieces of paper and books and whatever I had, and then ordered them all and put them all on their database and with one printout, so they could then send me reminders every time there was a vaccination update or something we needed to have. And then my kids were like, you know, old enough, like after you 10 or 11 or 12, you finish most of your regular vaccinations. And so when we moved to Germany, I wasn't really paying attention. So now, just in the last couple of weeks, I've contacted my US pediatrician. I was like, hey, can you print out those vaccination records for me? Because I've got all these books and pieces of paper, but I just think it's easier if it just comes on the one location, which I know that they have there. So
yes,
that's what I've done. So not very effectively would be my answer, but I would think now if I was starting off, there'd be an app that I could do that in, or you know, different, yes, things that would be more different, because the book that I got when my son was a baby was a big, thick, ridiculous thing about all sorts of stuff, but it just had like a couple of pages at the back for vaccinations. Whereas I think it'd be better if it was just like a birth certificate style thing and you just went and got it chopped or stamped or tabbed every time. I don't know. What about you, Kirsty? Yeah. Not me. You've got four kids. I've only got two. I can only, I'm born in four different countries. I can only imagine the, yes, exciting sorts of things that you've got for your kids' vaccination records.
So we were living in Jakarta when I had my first child, but I actually came back to Australia to have her. She's the only one I've had in Australia. So I think that set me off on a path that I probably wouldn't have been clever enough to do had she not been born in Australia. So how it works in Australia, and I wouldn't have known this had I not had a baby here, is in South Australia you get a blue book. I think in other states you get different coloured books.
Yeah, no, I had a blue book. Red books. Yeah.
Yeah, you had a blue book, yeah. And I think in other states it might be a red book or a yellow book or whatever. But in that book it had, you know, all your immunisation records, and they had little carbon copies on them, you know, where it went through to different things and whatever. So what I have done, so then my second child was born in Malaysia, but I knew that in South Australia I was going to need this blue book. So my very clever mother went on down to the Renmark Hospital and said, do you reckon I could have one of those blue books? And she did it for each child, bless her.
Because, go grand.
Yeah. Oh, she was the best, Granny. She was absolutely the best. And she said she was sure at the time it was perfectly illegal to do, but
the handover.
Yes. So what I've done is I took those blue books everywhere I went, and as they had vaccinations, I would rip off the packet that the vaccinations came in and staple them to the book, or yes, write them in, get the doctor to sign off and do whatever. But you're right, Nikki. All these things seem so important when you're 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, even 5 years, whatever. And by the time you get to your 13-year-old child and someone says, has she had her polio booster? And you're like, not sure. And then you find yourself in Qatar going, I really hope that drop that they're putting on her mouth is what it's meant to be. You know, I went to all lengths to get certain vaccinations for my children. I'm the anti-vax, whatever that is. I'm the most pro-vax person. I seek out vaccinations in all corners of the world. So my advice I would say now to anyone who's pregnant is to find out what the vaccinations are in your home country. Get a printout of what is the required vaccinations, because they do differ greatly. Oh, there are things
immensely. Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure now it's very easy to get a printout. Now you wouldn't have to go to the Redmark Hospital and get a blue book. You could just go online and print something out and then be able to stick everything to it.
Because I wonder with the app too, Nikki, is do you then have to take a photo of a PDF of the box that your vaccination?
You can probably scan it in, yes. I don't know.
But, yeah, that would be my advice, is because you might be thinking, like I did all those years ago, oh, well, whatever the vaccinations are in Australia are probably the vaccinations everywhere, and that is definitely not the case. They change wherever you are. I'm always interested in what other people have done. And I now have those four books. Nikki, I know you're going to know exactly where I have those four books, right?
Yes, in either in the safe or in the go bag.
Yeah, they're in the safe. And my plan was always to go to the health department with their books and say, here you are, can you put them in their records? But now, of course, my children are old enough that I will just hand those blue books over and say, off you go into the world, sort this bureaucratic nightmare out yourself. Sorry about that.
Well, interesting, because then on certain birthdays they send you things, like in Australia. So this just commenting, not an immunisation, but this week in the mail from the German government, I got my mammogram appointment. Not just a reminder to have one, I got an appointment, a time and a date.
Wow.
And if that's I can't amazing. Be there, I have to tell them. So I found that very confronting. I was like, yes, okay, birthday card, oh, mammogram appointment.
Well, I wonder then, Nikki, because if you were in Australia, you would have your poo sample thing sent to you at 50 to go and have your bowel thing. So I wonder if that's waiting for you somewhere in Australia.
I don't know, because I don't think I'm in the Medicare system anymore, because we don't have a current Medicare card. So certainly when I return it would be, but that's what happens. Yeah, they send you those things. Yeah. So anyway, very, very interesting. Interesting time. Okay.
All right. Last question, Nikki.
Okay, last question is, when you move back to your home country, should you – and you're waiting for your furniture shipment, should you rent or should you move back in with family?
Yeah, I think you'd want a timeline, I think, for family. So, yes, you could move back with family. And I think this all depends too on what your setup is. Is it you and your partner? Is it you and your own? Is it you and your children? How old are those children? What are your family's involvement with those children? So I would think everything would start off swimmingly, because everyone would be so happy to all be back together. But yeah, I think you'd want to have your timeline fairly fixed. Now, I've got other friends who have amazing setups with their families, where they might have, you know, what we would call the granny flat out the back, or, you know, mum and dad have got a special area that's them, and it all works perfectly. So, you know, for those people, go you. Well done. But I would have thought, I mean, I did, when we had our, you know, surprise move to Canada from Libya and we were in Australia, I did spend from January to March with my family, with three children under four. And I couldn't have done it any other way, I don't think. You know, and my mum had a full-time job. So I think that might have been what saved us, is my mum went off to work every day and she went and did her thing and I looked after the kids and whatever. I think back now, I think I was really quite terrible because I don't think I was putting dinner on the table or, you know, doing things. I was literally just surviving.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I'm pretty sure my mum might have come home and then cooked dinner. God, thank you, mum. It's amazing. I don't know if I'd be that logical, that kind perhaps, or that accommodating. Yes. Not sure if I would have been that accommodating myself. God, Nikki, I've got four kids. That means I've got four people that could do exactly the same thing to me.
Just something to think about.
Yes. So, no, I would think, yes, I would move back with family, but I would have a timeline so that nobody's feelings got hurt and you could have an eye in the future of how this was going to be. So you wouldn't get, you know, COVID-cated of when is this going to end.
Yeah, because that's the other thing, because if you move in with family because we don't really know what we're doing, that's also difficult because yes. You might not have a rent somewhere to move into, like you might be waiting to find a rental or, you know, as we know at the moment, even though ships are moving, just have to say, even though ships are moving things efficiently within a country, sometimes, you know, furniture removal is not being prioritized so that those things can take longer than you initially thought. So I just think it relies on all the things you've said. And as a parent of four children, I think you've probably got all those things covered.
And I, sure, Nikki, I think too, we quite often don't think about the implications on the parent. Like for us as the expats and the, you know, the people with the young children and whatever. But I was talking to a woman the other day whose adult child moved back in with her while she built a house and 7 years later moved out. Yes. And I think
7 years, it took 7 years to build the house.
Yes, because she then got pregnant and then she stopped, you know, then went back to work and then they had another baby and it was all too, maybe a little bit too comfortable, I think, too, for their kids. Yeah. So I think you've got to think about that. As much as your family are so happy to see you when you get home, you maybe, set a timeline before there's something disastrous, before things get complicated.
All right, Kirsty, favorite things. What are your favorite things this week?
Okay, so Nikki, we're going to discuss something together, which we never do because we've both watched or read. I'm thinking you've listened to the audiobook.
Yeah.
Or, yes. So this has popped up in my world too because I think we would be the absolute target audience for this. Glennon Doyle, who has written a book called Untamed. So Glennon, I think I probably first saw Glennon 10 years ago.
Yeah, you would have been in a mama story when you were into the blogging. When you were writing more often.
Yes, when I was writing more often. So she wasn't really, she wasn't a blog that I read, right?
No, because you knew that she existed, right?
Yeah, I knew she existed. I knew that she was in the same sort of world as Deuce and, you know, the big American bloggers who had big, big voices and big swag. Yep. And, you know, back in those days, I guess their blogs were all monetized with advertising and it was a whole different world of blogging. And, I kind of – she did not appeal to me, I guess, back then because it probably would have just been culturally too much, too different. You know, that big Christian voice. Yep. Yeah, it was called Mama Story. Yep. She was a recovering alcoholic from memory. And it did it. But I knew she was there. And it wasn't that I disliked her, it just that she wasn't one of the voices I was reading at the time. But she has popped up in my world a lot lately because she's promoting her book. And so I've seen her interviewed on Conversations, which is usually Conversations with Richard Feidler, but it's done with Sarah at the moment, who's replacing him. So I did listen to the entire interview on Conversations with her, and I did really enjoy the interview. And then I listened to her interview with Mia Friedman, and once again, I did really enjoy the interview, and it made me download the book, and I have started listening to the book. I think I'm up to about chapter 5. But I then went to go and follow her in her Facebook group, you know, after sort of reading and listening and whatever, and thinking, yeah, I do really like a lot of what you've got to say about women of my age and, you know, doing what's right for you and finding your voice and et cetera. But I realized I found her too much again. You know, so tell me about you, Nikki. What's been your feeling?
Well, so I heard her on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And so I was listening to that. And then I thought, oh, yeah. And then I had remembered that my US friend here had said that she'd read the book. And I thought, okay, well, I like her, my friend, and I like the things she likes. So, you know, I'm going to give it a go. So, as you know, I was really running out of things to listen to at the end of my walking. So I did it. But and then I started listening. And to me, what appealed to me was the story. Like she was married, she had 3 kids. And then one day she saw a woman walk into a room and then thought, oh, I love that woman. And then I wanted to know that story. That's the bit I wanted to hear about. Like, and now she's married to Abby Wambach, who was is the greatest US women's soccer player of all time, now retired, now does public speaking, et cetera, et cetera. And so I was interested in that part of it. And I don't think I signed up for the other part, which was the a bit much stuff about the self-reflection and stuff like that. So I messaged my friend and I said, you read Untamed, right? Like, did you like it? And she said, I did read it and I loved it and I dog-eared so many pages. And I said, oh, I'm finding it a bit much, but I will persist. I'm listening, not reading. And she said to me, sometimes a so-so reading voice might tip it. But I love Abby Wambach. And I was itching to get to the part where they met. And so I don't know that I'm far enough into it yet, or I like the idea, the way it's written in little sort of little vignettes and stories of different and jumps around in time, etc. But I'm not sure. I struggle. Like the other night I was walking, I was like, not going to listen to that. Like I found it. Any kind of remotely random podcast to listen to instead. So I'm not finding that I'm going back to it as much as I wanted to. And, or no, not as much as I wanted to, but, you know, as much as I would normally go back to a book. So I just, it's interesting because it is now, right? It is the now story, and it is the whole, you know, it's an interesting story, but I don't know, it's not grabbing me, and I'm also finding it a bit much. And maybe it is. Are you listening to it on Audible as well?
Yes, yeah. Look, I've really liked hearing her story about sort of the anger in her marriage, right? Because it comes out that her husband confesses that he's been cheating and whatever, and then she, I thought it was really interesting. There's a bit in the book called Blowjobs. Have you got to that? Yeah. And the whole idea of that is that she basically says to her therapist, you know, I just can't have sex with him anymore because I'm so angry with him. And every time we have sex, I'm so angry because she, you know, she's just can't move past his infidelities and whatever. And the therapist tells her, you know, have you considered blowjobs? You know, I have, and talks about how there's other women who find that less of a, you know, a sexual act or what? No, what was it? Less of a buy-in or less of a whatever?
Less intimate.
Yeah.
Yes. But I also wondered about when I listened to that. I wondered about her therapist because she said that at some stage in the book that they went to marriage therapy because that's what you do. Now, I know my friends in the US who are Christians and regularly go to Bible study, etc., they go to marriage therapy as just because they're nothing to do with their marriage being bad, just because it's something that they do as part mm-hmm. of that. And it's often a Christian-based therapist who emphasizes the fact that marriage is the most important thing for the family and that they have to stay married, and that's yes. the important thing. And I'm yes. and when I heard the therapist talking about that, I didn't hear like, so how are you really feeling about that? I heard like, you have to stay married, so you should consider other things, and blowjobs might be one of them. Like, it was yes. just like, that's how I heard
but
that.
But also what I heard in that is, I've been your therapist through your past two books and your very public blogging, and I need your marriage to survive.
okay. Yeah. I hear that too. But so that's the weirdest thing. And that's, so I read some online things. I went and Googled her husband to have a look at him. He's an ex-model. So I was looking at all this stuff, and a lot of people have said, well, she met, you know, her wife while she was promoting her book about how her marriage was surviving. And so
yeah, but that's what makes the interviews really interesting, is she's very honest about that. And that I found that fascinating, because she talks about how the publishers dealt with that, how Oprah Winfrey was going to deal yes. with that, you know, because that was the whole key, was that she was meant to be out promoting this book about the salvation of her marriage, and bang, met Abby at, you know, one of these book promotions. And I thought that was really honest. Look, I think, Nikki, I keep going back to the Michelle Obama's becoming in my mind with this, in how hard it is to promote things now. It's kind of like being a comedian now. If people have seen all your good work and they keep searching you and they keep seeing you tell the same joke over and over again, does that diminish your good work? And it's a bit like book promotion, I find now, in that I'd listen to it tell the same story in one interview and in another interview and in another interview. And so her voice to me became less genuine, because it was like, I've heard you tell this story and now you're telling me this story like this is the first time. And you've obviously been trained about which stories you're going to tell. And my logical brain goes, well, of course you're going to have to do that, because not everybody has 100 different stories for 100 different audiences. But the more you emphatically tell me, the less genuine you're becoming. And it's my Australianness that when I hear her say, oh, that's such a great question. That's such a great question, that I'm like, oh, don't do that. Do you know? But that's my problem. That's not her problem. That's yeah. just my culture of yeah.
You're asking, this is the 10th interview I've heard you say, that's such a great question.
Yeah. and in my Australian voice, you're meant to say, oh yeah, great question, and go on. But yeah. no, don't be so, oh, that's so great. Oh, I love that you've asked me that. No, no, calm down. Let's pull it back. Pull it back. So, yes, but I did really, I guess maybe even identify a bit with the whole thing about us all meaning, we're all meant to be such good mothers and good daughters and, you know, good partners, and that whole thing of, you know, you give and you give and you give, and then you get to a certain point where you're like, oh, hang on, there's no prize at the end of this. Yeah, yes. There's no,
and I think I actually agree with that. Sorry, I interrupted. But I think that sometimes women never ask that question, and maybe men ask it first, and that's why, you know, they can be seen sometimes to be the ones looking for other things and leaving marriages, etc. Because they're like, actually, am I meant to? Whereas women are like, shit, I've still got 50 things I've got to do. I can't sit back and think about, is there meant to be anything else? Like, this is my job. Like, I'm meant to cook, look after children and cook meals and have my children excel at these things and then be present as a wife in this format and whatever, and that women are just too busy like, and men don't have the same level of busyness, like that they can have the reflective moments a little bit. And that's maybe based on marriages that we've had, Kirsty. I don't know that the generation, the millennials or the Zs, are going to have the same sort of marriages. I think they're going to have slightly different marriages. I think I can only speak for myself, but I based my marriage around the fact that I was the mother and the wife and I did a lot of the things, and I didn't always expect my husband to do as much of those things. Like, he does other things, but I'm just like saying, perhaps now in a different kind of relationship, because I think we're still partners and equals, but a different kind of marriage would put different priorities on people having different responsibilities during the marriage. I just think that for now, I still see in a lot of my friends, women doing a lot of these things that she's talking about, and then not having the time to reflect on, you know, on that. I don't know if I explained that properly.
Yeah, no, you did. Look, I would recommend reading the book. I'm enjoying the book. I'm enjoying her acknowledgement of exactly that, of the wife, the mother, the expectations, and the you know, remembering sort of who you are, and that it's okay to be who you are and spend more time on you. That sort of voice, I think, is good. What I wouldn't do, and I would recommend listening to her interview with Mia Friedman. It's funny, and her interview on Conversations was good. I haven't listened to the Terry Gross one, so I'm not sure. Would you recommend listening to that one, Nick?
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I maybe want to get the book. So yeah, sure. Yeah, I did go and listen to the Mia Friedman one afterwards, and then I thought, it's just a different kind of thing. It's like when I talked about the fresh air and with Hannah Gadsby, how talking to an Australian is different. Yes. Like, I just feel like maybe that I find them both quite American, if I can say that. So it gives you that experience. Whereas if you're not American, you know, it's a cultural thing.
Yeah. Okay. What about you? What else have you got?
Okay. So I was listening to one of my go-to podcasts, The High Low, which I quite enjoy, and they talk a lot.
Yes.
They talk a lot about, you know, just something I'm going to say here, Kirsty. So you say to me sometimes, and people have said to me as well, oh, people listen to the podcast and they can't tell who is who, even though we obviously think we sound quite different and we have our own identities. I listen to The High Low and I listen to Fee and Jane and I don't know who's who. I know one of them's talking. Like, I know, and I know they're different people, but I don't necessarily know who's who. I just hear them say Fee and Jane or Dolly and Pandora. And it made me think about when you say that, and when people say that, and I'm thinking, does it really matter? I don't think it matters to me when I'm listening. Maybe it matters to other people, but that just came up and made me giggle a little bit this week.
Yeah, so I know what you mean. And it's why Nikki Moffat we have to often in the podcast say, yes, Nikki. Yes, Kirsty. Yes, Nikki.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I was listening to The High Low and they were talking about.
Yes, Nikki.
They were talking about a new Irish writer called Neisha Dolan and how her book, it was an article about her, and it said she has written the most talked about novel of the summer, but behind the scenes, Neisha Dolan was struggling to understand why social interaction had never come naturally to her. And it was about how being diagnosed with autism at age 27 changed her life. So I was like, you know what I'm like? I'm like, oh, yeah. Autism, I'm into this story. I'm off for a look. So I went and I read the article, which I thought was absolutely amazing, and I shared it on my I shared a big snippet of it on my Facebook page.
Yes, I saw that.
And I wanted to say, you know, there was a lot, but just like one paragraph in there just really resonated with me and made me think about so many things. But she said, as a novelist, I find my autism is often an enormous strength. Many aspiring writers get caught up in what other people think of them. They waste time on networking. They compare themselves with other authors and they read others' work with envy. Autism makes it easier to disregard all that. I take criticism sportingly because I'm very literal. I listen to what an editor has actually said, whereas a non-autistic writer might interpret, cut this paragraph, as I don't like your work, or even I don't like you. and autistic people are the ones who can't communicate. And I think that is very true. Like that, well, I mean, I'm not autistic, but the fact that someone can have those feelings. And I thought about, you know, when people say that about things you've written or whatever, you do have those feelings. Like a person does have those feelings. Oh, you don't like it, or no, I just don't think it should go there. Like that's what an editor's for. And just the fact that, and it's so just insightful in that she as an author is just focused on her writing. All she cares about is her writing and getting her writing better, and can be very focused on that. And yes. I just found that totally fascinating. And so I went immediately and got the book and I listened to it. Now the book itself, it's called Exciting Times. It's based about an Irish girl going to Hong Kong, and it's hilarious. I love listening to Irish accents. So an Irish person reads the book. So I was sucked right in. It was very, very easy to listen to. They compared it to Sally Rooney. They said it's very Sally Rooney, like normal people. Now, I haven't read the book of Sally Rooney. And when I watched the TV series, I said to you, I quite enjoyed it, but I felt that if I'd read the book, I would know what they were thinking, because there seems to be all these spaces where they should be thinking and they're not, and you can't see what they're thinking. But if you've read the book, you would know. And so I would say like that, they can never make this book into a movie, because so much of the conversation happens inside the characters' heads.
Yeah.
And so it's just about this girl, Ava, who goes to Hong Kong, and she spends her abortion fund on going to Hong Kong, because it's in Ireland, until abortion was legal, everyone apparently had an abortion fund that they kept a little separate bank account in case they ever have to go to the UK to do that. Oh. And then she talks about how people chip in. So when one of their friends gets pregnant, they all dip into their abortion funds and like help them go. Oh. And it's absolutely, that was mind blowing to me. And then she goes and she's an English teacher, which is so key to the book, because the book then reflects on language all the time and how people use language differently. And it's really clever the way it
works. Oh, so clever. That sounds so clever.
And talks about how she makes this much older banker friend, and turns out he's 28. And so you listen to the book thinking, I thought he was going to be 50. Yeah, that's right. So she's 22 and he's 28. Anyway, it's about being set in Hong. It's set in Hong Kong, so I was very thirsty for that content. Like I was like, oh yes, so you're talking about this place and this place and this place. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed the book, but I tried to think the whole time while I was listening to it, if I had not known it was written by an autistic person, could I tell? And it's a fiction book. So a lot of the books I read written by autistic people are memoirs, or, you know, about their life and being on the spectrum, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas this was totally a novel, a fiction book. And I thought, there's no way you could possibly tell. Like, I don't think you could tell. And so that was the way I was critiquing it, I think, in my mind. But I really enjoyed it. But it is definitely a millennial slash, you know, it's, yeah, she's 22 and the much older person's 28. So it's definitely written from the point of view of someone in that age range. Yeah. But really, really enjoyed it. And I would recommend the article, which I'll put the link to, as well as the book.
Oh, that sounds good. Okay, yeah. Nikki, I'll just do a quick couple more because we're going over time. But I was completely inspired by your 50 by 50. So for those that don't follow Nikki on the socials or have been listening intently to what she's been telling us for the last couple of weeks, is Nikki decided to do 50 rounds of the Ulster by the time she turned 50. And each day she was hashtagging, you know, number one, number 49, 48, 47, 46. It also was a great way for no one to forget your birthday, Nikki, because there was no way you were ever going to let anyone forget that you were turning 50.
But do you know what? You say that, right? And I agree. And when I was about 25, you know, I was thinking, oh, this looks bad. Like in the beginning, I was like, oh, it's ages away. And then I was thinking, oh, goodness, this does look bad. Several, and that is more than a few, people messaged me after and said, oh, I didn't realize that's what the 50 of 50 was for. I didn't realize it was your birthday. So then that made me actually feel better to say, okay, it wasn't like every day I was saying to people, one less day till my birthday.
No. It was more the day before when you started to, this is my last breakfast at 49 and this is my last this at 49. And this is, I was like, okay, I got it. It's 50 no, tomorrow.
Last haircut of the decade, I think.
Come on.
Enough about me.
I was totally inspired by it and I thought it was really clever. And I was thinking, you know, we need more of that in our lives at the moment to keep you motivated. And sometimes it's hard to do 50 of something. Like they say that it takes 21 days to make a habit, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking, well, you know, well, maybe we're not all going to do these habit-changing things where we then continue on with it for the rest of our lives. So maybe it's okay to do things for 4 days or 5 days or 6 days. So I was thinking, okay, I'm going to do 6 things a week and then come to you at each podcast. And I thought, no, that's probably a little bit too much because you're really only giving yourself a day off. So I'm thinking 4, that what I would love to do is that each week we say, okay, I'm going to do this 4 times this week and we can hashtag it on the socials or do whatever. I this week have decided I would like to try and do 4 10K walks, which is going to be a lot because, Nikki, if I could turn my screen around and show you, it is very grey and very windy and very cold. And I think I'm up for 4 days of rain in the coming 4 days. But I'm sure I can find an hour to do that for those 4 walks in the next 7 days.
An hour, so, 10Ks, that's speed walking right there. Okay, the 4 10K walks. I'm worried about your GPS counting that a bit fast. Like I would have someone drive the route.
I just think an hour 15. Yeah, maybe it's an hour 30 or maybe it's not a full 10Ks because I'm thinking it's
a fast, it's a very brisk walk. So an hour and a half, 9Ks, and then you'd be walking bit faster than that to get an hour and a half 10Ks in.
All right. So I've been an hour and a half.
Okay.
4 walks, 10Ks. That's going to be my one for this week. Nikki, what is yours going to be for this week? What would your 4 things like to be?
Okay. I'm going to do 4 5K runs because what I want to do is get to more into running. And now like my walking and I just want a new track because I did love that and I have had beautiful weather, but I want something new to do. So I'm going to try and find a new path and do a different way and then I'm going to try and do 4 5K runs.
Okay. And we're going to put these on Strava. Is that what we're going to do?
Yes. With Strava and then we'll hashtag them on the socials as well. So put them on the Insta. So we can put them both on the Two Fat Expats Insta and hashtag.
Yes. And can you hashtag on Strava? Oh, you must be able to.
I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with Strava as it.
Yes. All right. You're going to do that and then we will report back next week and maybe next have week. A different idea of what we're going to do 4 times.
Yes.
Doesn't have to be healthy. If anyone else would like to join in, please do, or has any ideas of what to do, you know how to find us. Head over to twofatexpats.com and push the microphone and send us a message and tell us what you think we should do or what you're going to do or if you want to join in. What can we call this, Nikki? 4 fat what? On the hashtags.
4 fat things.
4 fat things. Okay. 4 fat things. Or 4 fat expat things.
Also work.
Okay. So hashtag 4 fat expat things. Join us. Either do your 5K run or your 10K walk or whatever it is that you're doing that week and we'll talk about it next week. And Nikki, my one last thing, I know I've dragged this out for the 3 favorite things, is rhubarb this week. So, you know, I've been going to the markets and, you know, every chemo trip is a markets trip, which is lovely because there's nothing better than, you know, fresh foods and activity at markets and how lovely it is. And so I've been as new fruits and new vegetables have made their way in through the seasons, I've been making it a little bit of a challenge to like buy whatever's there and make something out of it. So rhubarb has made an appearance in the last couple of weeks. So I have been making rhubarb and apple crumble, which is much easier than pie. Crumble is easy peasy.
Yes.
But so easy, like just a bunch of rhubarb, chop it up, 3 Granny Smith apples and then a couple of, sorry, Nikki, as I'm talking, my son is literally going to try and flash his bottom at me through the window. He's just come home on his bike. He's happy now because he can see he's distracted me. Okay, back to the rhubarb and the crumble. So, yeah, bunch of rhubarb, 3 or 4 Granny Smith apples, it really doesn't matter. Couple of big tablespoons of caster sugar, bake it for 30 minutes. Then you get, I think it's 2 cups of self-raising flour and maybe about the same of brown sugar. Put some butter in there and sort of crumble it up in your fingers so it's almost like breadcrumbs. Pour it over the top and you've got dessert. Really yummy.
You don't even put oatmeal in there in your
And I did it last night for the dinner. And I didn't have Granny Smith apples. I only had, you know, red apples and did that. It didn't matter. And it's so easy and so simple. Oh, I've forgotten one thing. 2 big tablespoons of orange juice and some orange rind. And that, I think, is what makes it a bit special because you're sitting there going, you're going, what is that taste though, that tangy, citrusy, yum. And easy peasy. I love it.
Well, dessert. Next week I might put, after my running, I might put 4 new recipes and I might put that in and put them.
Yes, that would be a good thing. See, because I was thinking maybe 1 week I might try and do 4 vegetarian meals or 4 whatever, but we can switch it up. But I think it's fun to have little challenges. You really have motivated me that I thought that was a very good thing that you did.
Okay. Even though you think I was just advertising my birthday the whole time. Okay. All right. Good chat. Got to go to work.
Okay.
So I'll speak to you later.
See you later, Nikki Moffat. Bye.
Bye-bye.